to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Second hour of tonight's live broadcast now upon us. It's Saturday evening, January 22nd, as we broadcast to you from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, our flagship station. We're also broadcasting tonight to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org and Liberty News Radio. It's great to have you this evening. Keith Alexander did an excellent job of setting the tone for tonight's show, as he always does during our opening hour. Joining me now, Winston Smith in the co-host chair. Winston, how are you?
I am very well, James. It's always a pleasure to be on the show with you. It's always good to hear from you. And it's always a pleasure to be on with Mark Weber. I look forward to this.
Well, Winston, you stole my thunder. It's always easy to have a good time in the radio studio when you're interviewing a guy like Mark Weber. Mark, of course, is the director for the Institute for Historical Review, and he's going to be on with us tonight. He's actually on with us right now to talk about the failure of America's political leadership, especially the failure of prominent conservatives, quote-unquote, during this time of national decline and social disillusion. Mark, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Thank you very much, James. It's a real pleasure to be on with you again.
It's been far too long since your last appearance, so I'm glad that we can make amends tonight by having you on for a full hour. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd just like to remind you as we kick off this interview and this hour that you can join us in the Political Cesspool virtual fan party and online chat. It's being hosted by our partners, the Council of Conservative Citizens. If you want to ask a question of Mr. Mark Weber, we will be taking questions exclusively from those gathered in our chat room and fan party tonight. In order to participate, go to cofcc.org, cofcc.org. Mark, you had an opportunity back in November the 13th, I believe it was, to deliver a speech at an IHR meeting in San Diego, California. It was entitled, appropriately enough, America in Decline, A Society in Denial. What was the thesis of your remarks?
My main point was that America is a country that's more and more obviously falling apart. It more and more lacks cohesion, lacks a sense of who it is and direction. And the one of the biggest problems we have in this country is the failure of leadership, both liberal and conservative, to have any kind of worldview, any kind of principle, any kind of outlook that's really based in reality. Instead, they give us slogans and utopian ideas that will only make the problems really worse. This has been in place for a long time, and the solution is going to have to be a very big one. But I especially hammered away at the misguided principles, the ignorance of so-called conservative leaders like Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity. These people have an analysis and an understanding of America that's just utopian, unrealistic. And I laid out various reasons why their view is wrong and why it's dangerous, because millions of Americans see them as a real alternative to the trends that we're having, and they do not really offer an alternative.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Weber has provided us with a great resource. He has documented the remarks of his speech in a text version, and if you want to read the remarks that he delivered there at that IHR meeting in San Diego on November 13th, you can, of course, go to the IHR.org website and find them for yourself. We also have them prominently featured this evening at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Just click on our blog entry that reads Weber Bomb Pike to appear live on Saturday, January 22nd, and you will find a link directly to his talk here. Mark, I know Winston, my co-host, has been preparing for this interview tonight, so I'm going to turn it over to him in just a moment. But you mentioned the name of Sarah Palin. I don't know if you were listening to our remarks during the first hour of tonight's show, but we were talking about Palin, particularly some comments she made on her Facebook page And I guess it comes as no surprise. She's wrong on quite a few things. I don't know how much of it is that she believes in these things that she's now espousing, or she knows where her bread is buttered, but she laid out one of the most grossly effusive praises of Martin Luther King that you would ever read. And this is becoming the norm for the so-called conservative movement. And I only bring it up because it's recent news and that holiday has just passed. But what do you make of all that?
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's hard to know sometimes whether she really believes a lot of the things she says. My own sense of her is she's a very simple woman, not a very complex or insightful person. And she repeats a lot of things that she thinks people are supposed to believe. You know, one of the most dangerous things, James, is that in any society, when the cultural life and the intellectual life of a country has been taken over, it's very hard to go against the grain, so to speak, politically. And when you're told over and over that Martin Luther King is the greatest American of the 20th century, he's the only American of the 20th century, he's honored with a national holiday, and kids get this over and over from the time they're in kindergarten, we're indoctrinated with this idea, he's just a great guy, wonderful man, a role model, and so forth. It's very hard to oppose that without, in effect, saying there's something really fundamentally wrong with our system. It's not just that. Sarah Palin was out here just before the election campaign in November, and she told a big rally in here in Orange County that what Californians need to do is elect Republicans. We need people like Ronald Reagan. And she said there's nothing wrong with California that a good election can't fix. Well, this is so stupid, it's hard to believe anybody could really believe such a thing. The problems in America are so profound and so deep now, the idea they can be corrected by electing Republicans is just unbelievable. Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh give the impression that things were just going great until Barack Obama got elected.
Exact, great point.
This is just ridiculous. Barack Obama, normally in America, would never have gotten elected except that George Bush had wrecked things so badly, or things had gotten so bad under his administration, Americans elected someone as liberal as Obama. But Sarah Palin, I don't know if she even believes such a thing. But she and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and these people hold up Ronald Reagan as the big model of what America ought to be like. Well, people have forgotten even Ronald Reagan, when he was president, endorsed a huge amnesty program in 1986 that brought in, legalized, some almost 3 million illegal aliens in America. Now, does Sarah Palin think that's the answer to America's problem? Does she think that's a good guide? No reasonable person would, but they're easily fooled, I think. And these people, this is one of the biggest problems in America. Millions of Americans are satisfied with rhetoric, not with deeds. The trends in America have been going in the wrong way for a long time.
Hey, Mark, I hate to interrupt my friend, but we got to take a commercial break.
Okay.
And so I want to bring it to a stopping point before you go on to your next part of your agenda. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. One of my all-time favorite guests is on the line right now, Mark Weber. We're going to continue with him right after these words.
Right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. As we mentioned during that previous segment, we are joined now by one of my all-time favorite guests here in the Political Cesspool Radio program, and we have had an embarrassment of riches when it comes to great guests and good friends, and Mark is both. Mark Weber, the director of the Institute for Historical Review, he is recapping for us his talk at a recent IHR meeting entitled America in Decline, A Society in Denial. Now that the foundation for this hour has been said, I turn it over to my co-host Winston Smith to follow up with another line of questioning. Winston?
Thank you, James. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
By the way, folks, I want to remind you that you can read a text of Mark's comments at the IHR event in San Diego by going to www.ihr.org. Go to the blue sidebar on the right side and just scroll down until you see the title, America in Decline, A Society in Denial. And when you bring that up, there's also a link to an audio recording of Mark's address. So I encourage you to go there. And also while you're there, take a look at the book list on the left side. I like books, and so I encourage people to get books, especially from organizations like the Institute for Historical Review.
Thank you for the plug.
I think I said the wrong name though.
No, you said it right.
I did. Okay.
Hey, it's live radio. We're live, unrehearsed, and uncensored. But sometimes when we think we got it wrong, we still got it right. There's no edit button here. It's all going out. There's no stopping us. But continue on with
questions. All right, Mark. In your essay, you write this quote: "More than ever before in our history, the American people sense that something is very wrong in our country. They are concerned about rising socioeconomic inequality, an erosion of national identity and purpose, increasing social polarization, and growing contempt for the U.S. around the world," unquote. Now, besides the polls that you mentioned in the very next paragraph, what signs do you see that lead you to think that Americans are concerned in the ways that you say they are?
Well, I do cite several polls, and actually since that essay was written, additional polls have underscored the basic same point, that a majority of Americans now think that the country's on the wrong track, that we're going in the wrong direction. But there are so many signs of this. Young people are more worried than perhaps any generation in at least modern times about their future and about having a career and having a standard of living that is as good as their parents or their grandparents. In the very short run, there's this sense all over the country that people are aware of that not only is the federal government but state governments across the country are broke. They don't have any money, and nobody knows what to do with it. Part of the problem also is the paralysis of the two parties. Essentially, there's a lot of people who refuse to have any taxes raised, and then there's a lot of other people that don't want services cut. And at a time when we're out of money, when a huge part of our national and state budgets are given over to just paying interest on the debt, there's no answer out of it. This just cannot go on. But there's this larger sense, especially from older people, about how the country has changed drastically over the last 50 years. A sense of a purpose, cohesion, is just gone in America. Look, just in the last 15 years or so, several states now become majority non-white states: California, New Mexico, Texas, Arizona, and other states are quickly becoming like that. There's just no sense of cohesion in the country. And if there's anything the 20th century, I think, shows, it's that contrary to what we're told over and over, diversity is not a strength, it's a weakness. The most fragile countries are the most diverse ones, and the most stable and prosperous countries are the ones that are most cohesive, the most homogeneous. Mm-hmm. But yet our leaders tell us precisely the opposite. But, yeah, it's hard to measure it exactly, but not only various public opinion polls, but all the alarming indicators in our country, I think, underscore just how worried people are about the future.
Well, your marks there lead right into my next question. You write of the dramatic demographic shift that has occurred within the past couple of decades, and that Americans are anxious about the future, and that, quote, "Americans have never been so socially divided, confused about themselves as a nation, and worried about the future," end quote. Now, we know that from scientific studies, as well as plain common sense, that the more homogeneous a society is, then the more trust there. And conversely, the more heterogeneous a society is, the more mistrust there is.
Right.
These are scientifically proven facts, and yet our so-called leaders are hell-bent to make American society as heterogeneous as much as possible and as quickly as possible.
Right.
Why do our leaders insist on making American society as mistrusting as possible?
There's a lot of reasons behind this, but a lot of it is the false values that have been put out by our educational system and our leaders for many years. They're trying to make a virtue out of the reality. The reality is America is a diverse society. And so instead of trying to deal with that, which would be difficult, our leaders simply tell us that this is a virtue and that we should applaud it. There's few times in history where a people are told from the time they're in kindergarten that they should welcome their own dispossession, their own transformation of their society, and yet that's what's happening. And so a lot of the blame, I think, belongs to the not only the political but the cultural leadership and intellectual leadership in America, which has been espousing a false view about society and history for many, many years now.
You state that the major parties pander to the Zionist lobby, and that is an undeniable fact. What is just as undeniable is that the state of Israel really is not a friend of the U.S. Now, why do the major parties pander to Israel even when it's not in our best interest? Is it out of fear? Is it out of false theology? Is it guilt? Does the Israeli lobby have something on our leaders? What's going on with that? Why would our leaders give so much to a country when it is not in our best interest to do so?
You know, one of the most striking things is that in Congress, when a Israeli leader comes to speak at Congress, he's given just a tumultuous applause and welcome by the U.S. Congress. As Netanyahu said when he addressed the Congress, he's greeted more enthusiastically and supportively than he is even in Israel. Our leaders are more united in their support for Israel and what it stands for than they are for this country. And the bankruptcy of their thinking is underscored by the fact that they support one standard of how society should be organized for Israel and a completely different one for this country. Ethnic cohesion and a sense of identity is crucial to the purpose and the identity of Israel. And Israel prides itself on being a country with a firm ethno-religious identity. But in this country, we're told, and are the same leaders who say that's wonderful for Israel have a completely different take on what's good for the United States. Now, I think it's a combination of both ignorance and cowardice. It's essentially cowardice. It's essentially corruption. They put the interests of their own career ahead of the interests of the country, but they don't, for the most part, I think, have even a clear idea of what the interests of America are. And in a country where people don't have a clear sense of themselves and their own identity, then people who do have a clear agenda and a clear identity are able to have far more power than even larger numbers of people who are divided and confused. And
that's gentlemen, I got to push the pause button one more time here. I'll tell you what, having co-hosts like Keith and Winston make my job very, very easy. And, of course, having guests like Mark, it goes without saying it's going to be an excellent program. We've got to take a break, though, listen to a word from our sponsors. When we return, our interview with Mark Weber continues, so stay tuned.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. James Edwards and Winston Smith in studio for you this hour as we bring to the radio airwaves a live, exclusive interview with Mark Weber, director of the Institute for Historical Review. Mark Weber is truly an American treasure. This is the kind of commentary that you should be getting on Fox News. It's a shame that the Political Cesspool radio program is the only mainstream broadcast entity with the courage to tell the truth. Mark, why haven't you gotten your own show on Fox yet? I tune into you over O'Reilly, no problem.
The real wonder is that you're on the air as well as you are. That's the real wonder.
Yeah, too much truth for AM radio here.
Yeah. the really outrageous thing is that ideas and viewpoints that used to be part of the establishment that were taken for granted in America are now quasi-criminal.
Yeah, you know, we often joke that, you know, we joke around a lot about, you know, how we're able to, quote-unquote, get away with what we get away with. But if you take the ideas that this program espouses, I think we would have probably been labeled as political moderates back in the 60s. I mean, that's how far America has fallen.
That's right, yes.
I agree with you, James. Before I came on, I watched the movie V for Vendetta, and I'm pumped for something like that.
Well, hey, you know, we put it all in the souffle tonight. V for Vendetta, Mark Weber, The Political Cesspool, James Edwards, Winston Smith. You get all those ingredients together, and you're bound to have something explosive. So let's not waste a minute more with Trivial Banter. Winston, back over to you. Continue the fine line of questioning.
Okay. Mark, if you would like to continue what you were saying about the reason that political parties pander to the Israeli lobby, you can continue to do so. And after that, if you wouldn't mind, would you take just a few minutes and tell us about the IHR conference at which this address was delivered and tell us about the people who attended?
Well, this was a meeting in November. It's the first meeting we've had outside of Orange County for quite a while. Our offices are in Orange County. We're one of the very few organizations of our kind in North America that actually has an office, a place where people can meet, where we can hold meetings. We've tried to take advantage of this during the past year by building a network of people locally stronger than we've ever had in the past. There's been some really great help and great support locally during the past year and a half or so that we've never had in the past, and we're really encouraged by that. And in the meeting we had in San Diego, it was especially good to see so many younger people. It's one of the most encouraging signs that's happening around the country is how many younger people there are who see through a lot of the hypocrisy and deceit and lies of our system in a way that was not true 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. And that's an encouraging thing. I think a lot of Americans are very worried and upset, but they don't know how things got so bad, and they certainly don't know quite what to do about it. But it's encouraging that there are more and more younger people who do. And at our meeting in San Diego, which was made possible by support from a local friend of the IHR who's a businessman who is down there a lot, we were able to have that meeting down there. And I'll be speaking next month in Las Vegas, and we'll be doing some other meetings as well. We got some other things lined up that are very exciting. But there's just two things that have been very encouraging: this better network of local people and more and more younger people.
Is there, on the IHR website, is there a schedule of events that people can look for to see if you're going to be in their area?
No, not usually, because we don't have room for a lot of people when we hold a meeting here. That's one problem. The other one is security. We announce, as you know from, well, American Renaissance has had this problem, many others, if we announce meetings in advance, we've had trouble with hotels and so forth that will cancel, the same problems that other groups have had. That's another sign, really, of just how America has gone haywire, gone bad in the last 20 years, is that meetings where people express views that used to be taken for granted and understood by everybody are now treated as almost as criminals or as dangerous subversives is a sign of just how bad things have gotten. So generally, what we do is we don't announce meetings in a very public way. We announce them and we notify people who are friends of the IHR or friends of friends of the IHR.
We saw what you were talking about in Columbia, South Carolina last week when the NAACP held I'm just going to politely call it a meeting there on the grounds of the State House in Columbia, South Carolina. And they decided to build a box around a bronze statue of George Washington, but the attendees would not be offended by the father of our country. Of course,
have you heard about that, Mark?
Yes, I did, yes. No, this is one more sign of what's happening. Because if you start from the viewpoint that any form of racial discrimination is not only wrong but evil, well, then George Washington should be regarded in that way. Not only George Washington, but just about every American president up until about 50, 60 years ago. That's how schizophrenic America has become. The central fact, really, of American history is it was founded by people from Europe. That's just a crucial central fact of our history. If it had been founded by any other people, or if America was a country of its native population, it would be a completely different country. But both conservative and liberal leaders in America act as if the defining thing about America isn't its population, but somehow its constitution or some idea about a governance or so forth. That is not only childish, it's just incredible that people could believe such a thing. A country isn't defined by its constitution or its written constitution. It's defined by the character, the quality, the customs, the culture of its people. That's what's crucial. And our leaders, both Democrat and Republican and liberal conservative, ignore that central reality. That just shows an ignorance or about history and about life, really. Anything that ought to, a glance around America ought to show, it's the truth of that.
Mark, you mentioned the practical insignificance of the Constitution. I happen to believe the Constitution is practically a dead document, and that was driven home when the Republicans took over and they decided to read the Constitution in Congress, and it was the first time that had ever been done. I think that most of those people handle the Constitution like they would handle someone else's dirty underwear. You know, they'll do it for as long as absolutely necessary, but they'll look for the first opportunity to be rid of it.
I would go further than that. The Constitution is, the meaning of the Constitution is defined by our Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, for the first time in American history, is made up of people who don't even represent the majority population of this country. There is no longer even one Protestant member of the U.S. Supreme Court anymore. They're either Jewish or Catholic. Now, I'm not saying that's in effect wrong, but in a society that goes on and on about affirmative action, that's pretty astonishing. But in any case, what the Constitution means in real life is defined by the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has so twisted the meaning of it that the Constitution of the United States is no longer a refuge or a source of strength for our people. It's become a legal instrument for the continuing dispossession of our people by politicians and other people who have no real regard for our culture, our heritage, or really our future as a people.
In your essay, you write this, quote, "In our motion pictures and television and classroom and textbooks and in government, powerful interests had, for their own self-serving reasons, imposed a false and harmful portrayal of society and of history. As a result, our nation can neither understand itself nor direct its sight clearly toward the future." Can you tell us what some of those false and harmful portrayals of society are?
The central one, I think, is that a society is a collection of individuals. A healthy society is more than just that. A healthy society has an identity, a heritage that holds it together, racial, ethnic, religious, something. And a society that is based upon the idea that it's just a collection of individuals is a society with no cohesion, no identity whatsoever. That's one of the central fallacies that's propagated by political leaders of both the right and the left, or conservative and liberal in our country. I think a lot of the responsibility for this certainly lies with the efforts of the organized Jewish community in America.
Mark, hold up right there, because I have a question from the audience that falls in line perfectly with that which you just mentioned, and we've got to take a break. So when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, this hour has absolutely flown by. Hard to believe we've already had Mark Weber on for 45 minutes, but we've got one more segment with him forthcoming right after these words from our sponsors.
Guys, we'll be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-4848. 6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
One final fleeting segment forthcoming with Mark Weber, and it's now upon us. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to now be taking questions from the audience for Mark Weber, and I have collected a great many of them while Winston has been commanding the interview for the last few minutes here. If you want to pose a question for Mark Weber, there's only one way you can do it. We're not going to be taking calls over the air. To ask a question of any of our guests this evening, you're going to have to join us in the Political Cesspool Virtual Fan Party, which is being hosted right now at cfcc.org, the official website of the Council of Conservative Citizens, cfcc.org. And Mark, as I mentioned, I have quite a few questions here for you, so we'll try to cover as much ground as possible, take as many of these questions as we can in the final 10 minutes that we have here. So we'll do a little rapid fire line of questioning with you. And the first one, I think, coincides with the point you were about to make before that last commercial break was thrust upon us. Do you feel that the modern day conservative movement has been neutralized because of its obsession with the Jews?
Well, I think it's just sold out. It's been corrupt for a long time. It's put the interest of its career people ahead of the interest of the country for a long time. The proof of that is that they applaud actions carried out by Republicans that they criticize when carried out by Democrats and vice versa, and so forth. No, it's more a corruption, I think, than it is than anything else. But both political parties pander to the powerful Jewish Zionist lobby,
All right, a fine answer and a very accurate one, in my opinion. I want to remind everyone, before we take the next question from the crowd, you can visit the organization to which Mark directs, the Institute for Historical Review, IHR.org. Couldn't be easier to remember, IHR.org. Check it out, bookmark it, make it one of your daily reads, and don't forget to support Mark, as I mentioned, and I say this with no exaggeration in play. He is a true American treasure, and men like this are the heroes that we need. We encourage you to support him. Mark, the next question I think is a great one. What aspect of history would you say most needs to be revised but has been received the least amount of attention from the revisionists? Let me reread that. What aspect of history would you say most needs to be revised but has received the least amount of attention from the revisionists?
That's hard to say, but certainly right at the top of the list is World War II. In that regard, I recommend very highly the book by Pat Buchanan, Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War. Because how we look at World War II frames how we sort of look at the 20th century and look at ourselves. I think that it's really important to look critically at the assumptions that we're told all the time about that war. And in that regard, I highly recommend that book by Pat Buchanan. And I'm really happy that you've had him on as a guest on your show.
He's been on a couple of times, and it's so interesting and almost uncanny that you mentioned that book and Pat's name, because we interviewed him while he was on his book tour back in 2008 when that book was released, and you were on the very same show that he was. I believe you came on immediately after our interview with him back in June of 2008.
Oh, yeah.
And we actually just replayed part of that interview last week on this show because it is, of course, one of our very finest. So, and you know, Mark, I was reviewing your website today, and it just made me so proud to see so much truth. You know, I just revel in it. You know, the modern-day liberal dogma would lead you to believe, or perhaps I should say it has three tenets. All whites are bad. Southerners and Germans are the most vile. And Martin Luther King is God. I think that is one of the three founding tenets of today's modern-day liberal ethos. And I was on your website today, and I was just overwhelmed by all the truth that was there. And I was reading one of your recent articles about the Austrian reaction to the annexation by Germany back in the 30s and 40s. And it's just, you know, this is the kind of stuff people need to read. That's why this radio program is here. That's why IHR is there. And as I said, ladies and gentlemen, it really needs your support and deserves your support. Check them out at IHR.org. Another question, Mark. I talked earlier about you having your own show on Fox News, and I was serious, and I think other people were as well. Is there anything the audience wants to know that they can do to get you more appearances on CNN, Fox, MSNBC, et cetera?
Gee, James, you know much more about the mechanics of all that than I do.
Hey, gentlemen, can I interject something right quick?
Please do.
There's an opening at MSNBC.
Yeah, Keith Olbermann is out now, yeah.
Hey, what do you think the odds are that MSNBC replaces Keith Olbermann with Countdown with Mark Weber?
Very good, yeah.
You think good odds, huh?
Yeah.
Well, do you think, you know, I've been on CNN a few times. I know you've had some big interviews as well, Mark, but, you know, Rachel Maddow came out against us, and so did Keith Olbermann for that matter, last year, and it was two of our defining moments of 2010. We were very proud about that. But I have found that lobbying them, she had attacked us, of course, without an invitation for us to offer a rebuttal. And I encouraged our listening audience to send in emails, and they sent in hundreds of them to no avail. Is there a formula you think that would work, or do you just wait for the call?
I guess I think the formula is, to, if you get in the news enough, I think that's what needs to be done. But that's hard to do. It's a little, I guess, when Jared Taylor was accused by Fox News of being linked to the shootings in Arizona, I guess that got him in the news. That kind of thing does. But other than that, it's very difficult. You know, the situation's so bad that Jimmy Carter isn't even allowed to speak anymore at a Democratic Party national convention anymore, because he's out with the real powers in our society.
Yeah, if Jimmy Carter is too far out of bounds, I don't know what hope there is for the rest of us truth tellers.
Well, Pat Buchanan isn't invited to speak at a Republican National Convention.
You know, Pat Buchanan really should be the figurehead of the Tea Party movement, and unfortunately, it's Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck, etc. Thankfully, Pat still gets invited on Morning Joe on MSNBC with Joe Scarborough, you know, and he's on this show, and that's about it now.
Yeah.
But you know, it's guys like him that really should be leading up a very mainstream grassroots conservative rebellion, and unfortunately, he's at the very end of their invite list.
Well, I stress very strongly, not just conservative or liberal conservative principles, but that consistency of principles of any kind. I mean, I have more respect for Ralph Nader than I do for the vast majority of conservatives.
That's right, and that's
a
good point. I'm glad that you made that.
About some things. I disagree with Pat Buchanan about some things, with Ron Paul, but these are principled men. These are men that have shown that they'll stick with their worldview and their principles even when they're when they're smeared, and that's a great thing. Far better to have someone of principle you might disagree with on some issues than the spineless people that pass for political leaders in our country generally.
Mark, that's an excellent point, and we have just about a minute left. I want to try to get two more quick questions in for you because these are important questions. Where can an individual start, especially if that individual is just coming into awareness? How would you get them started on this course? What should they do?
This is a very good question. We had a meeting here in December, and I tried to address that. People come to our meetings, and they'll say afterwards, I agree. What can I do? That's difficult. Every person has to ask himself what his own talents and abilities are and then do the best he can. It deserves a whole show in itself.
It really does, and it's a question I'm asked all the time, but it is interesting to pose it to other leaders and see what their opinion is, and I guess you gave the most accurate answer that can be given.
Well, some people are able to write. Some people can raise money. Everybody can donate money to worthy causes. Some people are good at passing out flyers. It depends on a person's ability.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. It depends on their own individual strengths and attributes.
But
last question, Mark, and I want to get this in before the time is over. You mentioned the constant inundation that our people are under, the constant brainwashing, the media, so on and so forth. What is the most effective way that the layman, the average listener to this program, can have to expose the anti-white lies that are presented to young people?
That's also hard. People should always stay factual. They should be. They should stay sober. They shouldn't engage in. They should avoid polemical name calling for other people, but stick with the facts and stick with and support leaders and websites and publications which are solid and don't confuse stridency for effectiveness. That's important.
Mark Weber, ladies and gentlemen, check out his excellent website, the Institute for Historical Review, IHR.org. Mark, this hour has gone by in the flash of an eye. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much, James, for having me on.
Mark Weber, everybody, stay tuned. I will be back right after these words with our final two guests of the evening, Gordon Baum from the Council of Conservative Citizens and Reverend Ted Pike of the National Prayer Network. Stay tuned.
There's a third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They call the rising sun.